This week, we are covering an open missing persons case out of Cape Coral, Florida. It's the case of Lauren DiMolo. I first became aware of this case not through the massive media coverage about her disappearance, because it doesn't exist, but alternatively, through the award-winning, outstanding podcast called Complicit. It's been deep diving into this case since February of 2021. Caitlin and Hillary, the two hosts of the show, are absolutely crushing this investigative pod. This is no wiki page pod. This is a deep dive into everything and everyone that they can get their hands on. I mean this when I say it. I love this pod and the work that Caitlin and Hillary have done in this case in order to shed light and help get answers for the family in this mysterious and befuddling case. The fact that we are doing an entire episode of The Docket on the case tells you all that you need to know about the respect that Darren and I have for these ladies in their pod and the important work that they have done and continue to do, as Lauren DiMolo is still missing. So after we give you the primer, I recommend that you immediately go to wherever you get your pods and follow and or subscribe to Complicit so that you can get all of the details, hear from the family and the friends of Lauren, and who knows, maybe one of you out there unwittingly knows something that can be of help in solving the mystery of what happened to Lauren DiMolo. Imagine, if you can, calling your sister, your brother, your child, your friend, and it goes right to voicemail. No big deal. You have plans, so you're wondering what their ETA is. You wait a few minutes, and you call again. Again, no answer. You're becoming slightly concerned. They usually answer when you call, especially when you have plans. Now, an hour has passed. Still, no return call, no return text. You're not quite in panic mode, but you're definitely very concerned at this point. Now imagine that the entire day goes by, and you are now laying in bed at 10 p.m., never having heard from them. You stare at your phone. You tap on their name in your text stream, and you just look at the last text that you sent them a couple hours ago. Hello? You wake up, and the first thing that you do is check to see if they text back. Again, nothing. Now, panic has set in. You begin calling family and friends to see if they have heard from them. None of them have, and they are equally panicked. It's time to go to the cops, because something is wrong. This is what the family of Lauren DiMolo experienced on June 20th of 2020, as Lauren's sister Cassie called the Cape Coral Police Department to ask them to do a wellness check on her sister at her apartment. This would officially begin the nightmare for Lauren DiMolo's family, which they are currently still living. So what do we know about Lauren's mysterious disappearance? Let's dig in. On June 19th of 2020, Lauren's live-in boyfriend, a man named Gabriel Pena, allegedly arrives back to the couple's apartment from work at approximately 10 p.m., Gabriel claims that he walks into the apartment and discovers that Lauren isn't home. At this point, he calls Lauren's father, Paul DiMolo, and tells him that Lauren isn't there. Gabby tells Paul that the last time that he saw her was at 6:30 in the morning, and that she was still in bed when he left for work. Paul tells Gabby to call the police and make a missing persons report, as he lives out of state and he can't be there to do it himself. Gabby tells him at that point that he will. At this point, Gabby allegedly calls Cape Coral Police to report her missing and is allegedly told that he has to wait 48 hours to file a missing persons report. Keep this story in mind as we progress, because we'll be getting back to it, I promise. Now, of the tons of people that Caitlin and Hillary have spoken to in their pod, Gabby Pena is not one of them, as he refused to speak with them. Now, I have to tell you, from my personal perspective, this fact immediately raises red flags. If Hillary and Caitlin were cops, yeah, I get it. Shit, that's my number one rule to my clients. Don't talk to the cops. But they aren't. they're investigating the disappearance of the woman he is in a relationship with. It would stand to reason that he would want to be helpful, unless. The fact of the matter is that there has been no actual confirmation from law enforcement that Gabby actually made a call to CCPD on the 19th. Fast forward to June 20th, Cassie, Lauren's sister, makes a call to CCPD for a wellness check. The responding officer calls Paul DiMolo, Lauren's father. While standing at the front door of Lauren's apartment, she tells Paul that, quote, she knocked and saw somebody peek through the blinds. She couldn't tell who it was, but they won't open the door, end quote. Paul tells her to bust the door down. The cop tells him that she doesn't have probable cause to gain entry by force. Mysteriously, the body cam footage from this entire event was deleted by law enforcement at some point during the investigation. This is the first of many oops committed by the CCPD. On June 21st, Gabby makes a missing persons report on Lauren, after she's been missing for, at this point, 2 days. Now, I want to jump back real quickly to Gabby alleging that he had attempted to call in a missing persons report on the 19th at around 10 p.m., claiming that he was told that he must wait 48 hours. The fact of the matter is, that is not the law in Florida, and has not been for a very, very long time. Now, this is the narrative that Hollywood and TV have been putting out there for years about this 48-hour waiting period, and it is my belief that Gabby didn't contact law enforcement at all on the 19th. I'm not basing this opinion on the fact that he refused to cooperate with Caitlin and Hillary on the Complicit podcast, but based on the following three facts, two of which I believe any reasonable person would relay to law enforcement if they were being told that they had to wait for 48 hours, which, again, I don't believe took place. Going back to May 22nd of 2020, it's known that Lauren terminated a pregnancy. 9 days later, she is Baker-acted due to behavior that she was exhibiting at her favorite place to relax and reset, which was the Four Freedoms Park, spitting distance from her home. So if you're wondering, what is the Baker Act, Bob? Well, I'm glad you asked. The Baker Act subjects a person that is deemed to be potentially a threat to the health and safety of themselves or others, as they are exhibiting extreme behavior, which could be construed as some form of mental illness or distress, to an involuntary mental health examination, and they can be held up to 72 hours, and sometimes even longer. During this period of time, the individual will be examined and interviewed extensively in order to determine the mental state of the patient, also to determine if the person should be held for longer than 72 hours, in which case that would require the filing of a petition with the circuit court. Apparently, on this particular day, Lauren, who clearly seemed to be struggling mentally with the procedure that had taken place just 10 days earlier, was observed jumping into the boat basin within the park where swimming is prohibited because she believed that she was being followed and chased by someone. Lauren is finally released from the first Baker Act on June 8th, 7 days after she was admitted. On June 15th, 4 days before she went missing, Gabby, after speaking with Paul DiMolo, calls in another Baker Act, and he tells Paul that she is having another episode, saying that the devil was present and that she's complaining bitterly about the neighboring apartment. Paul leaves it to Gabby's discretion on whether or not he would call it in. Gabby, of course, did call it in, and Lauren was Baker acted for the second time. Lauren was released from her second Baker Act on June 18th. Now, I find it incredulous that if Gabby had actually called in a missing persons report on the 19th and they had told him that he had to wait 48 hours, that he would have not brought it to the attention of the police the fact that Lauren had just been Baker acted twice within the last 3 weeks and had just been released the day prior to the day she went missing. None of that makes any sense to me. And further, Caitlin and Hillary have not been able to get their hands on the police file as it's an active investigation. So it's unknown if Gabby's phone records were checked with respect to whether or not he actually made the call on the 19th, which I believe is incredibly suspicious behavior. So on June 21st, Gabby finally goes to CCPD and files a missing persons report. He writes a handwritten statement, which reads as follows. Quote, I spent the night of Thursday with my girlfriend, Lauren DiMolo. I left to work in the morning, and when I returned around 10 p.m., she was not there. I called the police and was told that I have to wait 48 hours. I received a phone call from Lauren's father, who wanted me to file a written report because he does not live in Florida. He wants a case number. End quote. So Gabby claims again in that statement that he tried to contact the police and was told that he had to wait the 48 hours. To this point, it is unclear whether law enforcement has indicated whether or not this statement has been verified, either by their dispatch log or Gabby's phone records. Now, considering just exactly how important the first 48 hours are with respect to a missing persons case, one would think that law enforcement would have looked into this immediately. However, it seems as if they haven't. Now, on June 22nd, Paul DiMolo calls CCPD to check on the status of the investigation. He is told by the officer on duty that the report had been filed incorrectly by the officer that took the report. To make matters even worse, this cop couldn't access the report to make the correction necessary until the cop that was on duty, who entered the report, came back to work, which was going to be on the 24th of June, 5 days after Lauren went missing. Holy negligence. So on June 23rd, because the cops aren't doing a damn thing, Casey, who is Lauren's sister, Lindsay, who is Lauren's half-sister, and Matt, who is Lindsay's fiance at the time and now her husband, go to Lauren's apartment on their own. Before doing this, Cassie stops in the Lee County's sheriff's office to attempt to get them to fix the clerical error so the case will be placed in the hands of an actual detective. The sheriff there at Lee County tells her that it's outside of their jurisdiction and that their hands are tied. Wow. So the three arrive at the apartment and they have a key, so they gain entrance and they call for the wellness check at that point. While they're waiting for the cops to show up, out of the blue, Gabby appears. Now, this is interesting because Gabby had already turned in his key to the apartment and really, on its face, had no reason to be there. However, while they're standing there, Gabby proceeds to take the smart TV from the apartment. Now, they don't stop him, and he ends up leaving with the TV. A short time after, the police actually show up, at which point they inform him of Gabby showing up to the apartment and taking the TV. Now, at this point, Hillary and Caitlin don't know whether or not any follow-up was done on why he took the TV or whether or not the TV was taken into evidence. That will be something that will be followed up on throughout the course of the season. So the cops end up looking around, and then they report to the three that they see no sign of a struggle or that anything's out of place. So once again, they leave. Before they do, the three ask the police if there had been anything done to follow up from the initial wellness check when somebody was peeking out of the curtain. And once again, they are told that there has been no follow-up to that either. This is unbelievable. Finally, on June 25th, the case is assigned to a Detective Jones of the CCPD. This is a full 72 hours after Lauren was reported missing, and 120 hours after she was reportedly last seen. This is obscene. But wait, it gets worse. Let's go back to June 20th, the day after Lauren goes missing. You'll never guess what's found in Lauren's favorite local spot to relax. They end up finding her purse, her keys, and her shoes. Yeah, you heard that right. The day after Lauren goes missing, a quote, park goer calls in the items to the police. Now, we have no idea who this park goer is, but apparently the items were found on a picnic table and were turned into a park ranger. Huh, so much for the integrity of potential evidence. Due to the fact of the delay of the missing persons report and then the horrific clerical error, all of the items were then tossed in with the lost and found items kept by the department. This pretty much destroys any potential forensic use because of cross-contamination. But wait, it gets worse still. Because of the delays and incompetence, any video footage of who placed the items on the picnic table, or even who the park goer may have been, had been erased, as footage is only saved for 48 hours. In terms of a potential civil lawsuit against the CCPD, whether or not Gabby actually tried to call in the missing persons report on the 19th is smoking gun evidence for the plaintiff in that case, if in fact he did call and some knucklehead officer actually informed him that he had to wait 48 hours. If that's not the case, then that time lapse sure helped the potential killer seemingly get away with murder. Now fast forward to July 2nd of 2020. Lauren's family, that's right, her family, not law enforcement, find Lauren's shirt laid out on the sand in Four Freedoms Park. The discovery of this shirt comes 7 days after the extensive police search of the park. Also after the daily searches of the park by Lauren's family, and oddly, after a news crew had filmed a piece in the exact location that the shirt was found only days earlier. This means that after all of these things occurred, that someone neatly laid Lauren's shirt on the sand in the park, just waiting for it to be found. The cops bag and tag the shirt and confirm shortly thereafter that it is in fact Lauren's shirt, but unbelievably, no other DNA profile is found on the shirt. The family inquires if the police questioned anyone at the park after the shirt was located. What do you think the answer to that is? No, of course they didn't. I mean, why would they think that a potential killer that's leaving breadcrumbs of evidence to be discovered might not be sitting there watching all of it happen? Despite the continued incompetence of the CCPD, Matt, Lauren's would-be brother-in-law, tells the cops, "Hey, look there. There's a video camera trained right on the spot that the shirt was found. Maybe y'all should go see what you can see on that video." The cops are amazed by this layman's crack investigation skills, and he is hired on the spot and is immediately named a detective on the case. That's, of course, absurd, but not nearly as absurd as the Keystone cop-like behavior of the CCPD. So the cops allegedly take Matt's advice and go watch the video. They report back to the family that the video shows two homeless men kicking up the sand in the area, thereby unearthing the once buried shirt. I mean, I have a million questions about what the cops are claiming with regards to these two homeless guys. How about the fact that Casey, Lindsay, and Matt had walked over that very spot earlier in the day and saw nothing? And these are people that are looking for something, anything, that can help give them answers. For context, picture a bright crimson shirt laying in the white sands of Cape Coral. There is no way that they would have missed it. No way. Well, fortunately, CCPD has the footage saved in the event that the case makes its way into the hands of a detective who has a clue, right? What's that? They didn't save it? That can't possibly be true, can it? Because that moves past incompetence and into the realm of, are the cops or a cop complicit in this matter? I mean, seriously, a couple of screw-ups, maybe, but one massive blunder after another? That's really hard to swallow. On July 20th, 2020, the cops have gotten nowhere, and at this point they decide to bring in some cadaver dogs to the Four Freedoms Park. Upon arrival to the park, the super sniffing hounds do a U-turn, as they appear not at all interested in what they are sniffing in the park, but instead, they seem to be a bit more interested in getting a better sniff of a van that is across the street from the park. The dogs are alerting in several areas around the van. The cops are thinking, holy shit, who owns this van? They run the plates and quickly discover that the van is owned by a man named Victor. And who, pray tell, is Victor, you may be asking? Oh, he's no one. He's just the man that's married to Lauren's mother. That's right, he's Lauren's stepfather. And he works for a flooring company, and that is his work van. But wait, it gets better. guess who his work partner is? Did you guess Detective Jones, the lead detective on the case? Well, as brilliant as a guess as that is, it's wrong. No, his work partner is Gabriel Pena. Good old Gabby, Lauren's main squeeze. Mind blown? Yeah, mine too. The hounds, well, they aren't done. They furiously sniff their way up a flight of stairs, and they begin alerting at a front door of an apartment, which of course is the residence of Lauren's mother and Victor. Boy, oh boy, now we're getting somewhere. When people can't get the work done, you go to the dogs. The cops at this point gain entry to the apartment, and the dogs head right to a curtain that separates the living room from the laundry area. The dogs aren't done, though, and they then lead the coppers back outside to a couple of trailers that contain various work materials. It's unknown who owns these trailers. So what happens next is the cops, of course, get a warrant to seize the van, at which point they then process it, only to return it a week later without making any arrests. The cops explain to the family, look, these guys are in the flooring industry. People bleed on their floors. The dog hits, because of this, could easily be misinterpreted. Therefore, we find that the hits are inconclusive. Of course, the owner and trainer of the dogs say that that assumption by the police is categorically false. Well, what about the curtain, Bob? The curtain, the cops say, contained methane gas, which resulted in another false positive. Again, the owner of the dogs calls bullshit on this statement as well. And if you want to hear the detailed explanation of the dog's owner and trainer, he'll give you all that you need to hear. So the case continues to go unsolved. And then, on October 13th of 2021, the Lee County Sheriff's Office calls a press conference. Now they want to help, announcing that they have found human remains consistent with Lauren DiMolo. During the presser, the sheriff requests Lauren's dental records to confirm that the remains are in fact Lauren. They requested the dental records despite the fact that they had a recent PET scan from Lauren's recent hospital stay, which of course included images of her teeth. So if it seems that the Lee County Sheriff may have put the cart before the horse in calling the presser, it's because they did. Most likely because Paul DiMolo was roasting the CCPD on social media for being incompetent ninnies. Of course, the local news ran into his post online and made it a feature story that very night. In response, the sheriff said, oh yeah, Paul? Well, we found your daughter. How about them apples? And called the presser. The thing is that the remains weren't Lauren's. And to make matters worse, the cops knew that before calling the press conference. Nothing about the remains that had been found resembled Lauren DiMolo. I'll never understand what they thought that they would gain from conducting this sham press conference. As I sit here today, the tragic case of Lauren DiMolo remains unsolved. And believe me when I tell you this, we have only scratched the surface of what Hillary and Caitlin have uncovered in complicit, as they are the pair out there that is helping the family hold the police accountable. There are many potential suspects. Every one of them, the ladies dig into. The interviews with Lauren's family are devastating, and Paul DiMolo is exactly what you'd expect, a very pissed off father. We here at Defense Diaries truly hope that this case is solved, and we can't encourage you enough to subscribe and listen to Complicit. It's so well done, and it's exactly what you love about our pod. It's a deep, deep dive. So head over there immediately and dig in. So guys, thanks for listening. And one other announcement here on the pod. The premiere of season 6 of our great friend Josh Hallmark's outstanding deep dive into serial killer Israel Keyes is available everywhere on October 27th. And that pod is called True Crime Bullshit. You gotta check that out, because he is without question one of the deepest divers in the game. And this season, he's boots on the ground, trying to locate Keyes' victims. It's sure to be mind-blowing. Defense Diaries will be back next week with the next episode of Tunnel Vision. So, in the meantime, here's D with some more shout-outs to our incredible patrons.
What's up, guys? So, if your name is one of the names that I'm about to say, then we thank you. We thank you very much. And we'll start it off with Erica W., Christy J., Shannon G., Rick S., Kurt M., Leah R., Haley, Mara B., Quinn A., Shell WL, Amaluka, Sarah B., Marias. Thank you guys for all of your support. Your wonderful, sweet, sweet, wonderful support. If you'll excuse me, I've got to go pry Bob away from this episode of Matlock he's watching to see if he has anything else to say. I bet he will. Thanks.
Thanks, D. And finally, to all of our beautiful listeners, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Talking to you next time.